for being with us, of the Okanichi Band of Saponi Nation in North Carolina, chair of the Environmental Justice Committee for the NAACP of Alamance County, and Russell Chisholm of the Mountain Valley Watch Coordinator for the Power Coalition. That does it for our broadcast, and we end today on a very sad note. Well, we want to extend our deepest condolences to our Democracy Now! Producer, Maria Inez Taracena, on the death of your grandmother, Ana Elsa Herrera, in Guatemala. Mama Elsa was 94 years old. And also, dear Maria, on the passing of your brother, David Miller Flores, in a tragic car accident in Arizona. He had turned 26 years old last Sunday. Our condolences to your whole family. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Fels-Mike Burke, Dina Guzder-Messiah-Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Taracena, Sharina Nadura-Sam-Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, Mary Conlin, our executive director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Noguera. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
KBOO News is proud to present our 2022 Citizens Agenda Survey, and we want to hear your thoughts as we approach the midterm election. What do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Let us know, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card as a thank you. Plus, it will help our volunteer reporters cover the election with the info that you need to know. Find the survey online at bit.ly/KBOO-survey. That's KBOO's 2022 Citizens Agenda Survey, available online through September 25th at bit.ly/KBOO-survey.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the second Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Pacific Northwest wildfire risk is growing. The Boy Scouts of America's restructuring plan is approved by a bankruptcy judge. And, in international news, the United Kingdom and the rest of the world mourn the loss of Queen Elizabeth II. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 9th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. The National Weather Service is warning that gusty winds and low humidity will bring extreme fire danger to western Oregon and Washington this weekend. Already, evacuation notices have been upgraded, and classes have been canceled. Hundreds of thousands of acres are currently on fire, and areas from the Columbia River Gorge south to Douglas County in western Oregon are at risk from the forecasted east winds. Fire crews, including several from Washington State, have been sent to those areas in an effort to quickly respond to fires that might arise. Portland General Electric plans to shut off power in 10 areas because of the risk of fire affecting about 30,000 customers. Pacific Power notified about 12,000 customers that it would start shutting power off early this morning. Both PGE and Pacific Power plan to open community resource centers for people losing power in their homes. As of today, the Double Creek Fire in eastern Oregon was 137,179 acres in size and 15% contained. The Cedar Creek Fire east of Oak Ridge was consuming 33,099 acres and was 12% contained, and the Rum Creek Fire in southwest Oregon was 21,347 acres in size and 46% contained. Yesterday, state and federal officials provided updates on the status of the fires and fielded questions from local residents. The speakers cautioned that the future of the fires was dependent on the weather. Utility officials are recommending people in shutoff areas prepare emergency kits with water, food, and cash. A second-generation COVID booster vaccination is available in Oregon. The Food and Drug Administration and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention authorized bivalent booster shots from both Pfizer and Moderna, which were designed to protect people against both the currently dominant Omicron variants and the original strain of the coronavirus. The updated vaccine specifically targets the currently circulating Omicron BA4 and BA5 variants of COVID-19, along with the parent strain. In Oregon, BA5 is the overwhelmingly dominant variant. The Moderna and Pfizer boosters are available only for people who have already received their first two COVID-19 shots. For people 12 and up, the bivalent boosters are now considered to be the standard option. State epidemiologist Dean Seidlinger says people 65 and older and those with underlying medical conditions should get the new booster to help ensure they remain protected against severe disease and death. The immunity from the original COVID-19 vaccines and boosters wanes over time, and that can mean an increased risk of severe illness. Seidlinger said, quote, "Getting a bivalent booster dose now will kind of rev your immune system up. It will keep you out of the hospital, keep you from dying," end quote. Seidlinger encourages anyone who is eligible, particularly people who have gone many months without a booster or a COVID-19 infection, to get the shot. According to the Centers for Disease Control, you should get the new booster shot at least 2 months after your last vaccine dose. If you've had a recent COVID-19 infection, the CDC recommends waiting at least 3 months from when you first tested positive or felt symptoms, unless there are urgent reasons you need to boost your protection against repeat infection. It does not matter which original vaccine series a person previously received, and people who are now eligible for a booster can choose whichever shot they prefer. A large fraction of Oregon's initial supply went to pharmacies. In the Portland area, Walgreens, CVS, and atpharmacy.com locations received the new booster shots and had appointments available as of 2 days ago. The boosters are also available at some Oregon Health Authority walk-up clinics and high-volume vaccination sites. Those wanting to get the booster from their primary care physician will likely have to wait until at least next week. That's when most medical providers will start receiving their orders of the new booster from the state. The process Moderna and Pfizer use to develop the boosters is similar to the process for annual updates to the flu vaccine. About 2.7 million Oregonians are eligible for the new shot. A bankruptcy judge approved a $2.46 billion reorganization plan proposed by the Boy Scouts of America, which would allow the organization to keep operating while still compensating tens of thousands of men who claim they were sexually abused as children while involved in scouting. Boy Scouts of America sought bankruptcy protection more than 2 years ago in an attempt to survive a flood of lawsuits alleging child sexual abuse by scout leaders and volunteers. The amount an individual survivor can receive from the bankruptcy plan depends on multiple factors related to the alleged abuse. The plan calls for the scouts and their local councils, along with settling insurance companies and organizations sponsoring troops, including Catholic institutions and parishes, to contribute to a fund for survivors. In return, those groups would be shielded from future lawsuits over scout-related abuse allegations. Most of the $2.46 billion is to be paid to survivors, but some funds would be set aside in a trust to continue litigation against entities that have not settled, mainly insurance companies. It will likely take months for any of the claimants to receive compensation. The settlement has drawn mixed reactions from abuse survivors. Some were proud they stood up to the Boy Scouts, while others feel they were dismissed because the organization hid behind the statute of limitations in some states. The Boy Scouts of America said it is pleased the court has approved its reorganization plan. They said, quote, "We continue to be enormously grateful to the survivor community, whose bravery, patience, and willingness to share their experiences has been instrumental in the formation of this plan," end quote. The Boy Scouts said the perspectives and priorities of the survivors, quote, "will be ingrained in the BSA's programming moving forward," end quote. The BSA also said they will next begin an appeal process in order to emerge from Chapter 11. A federal district judge must still sign off on yesterday's ruling. More than 80,000 men have filed claims saying they were abused as children by troop leaders around the country. Pro-choice Latinas are fighting abortion misinformation. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Nevada U.S. Senator Catherine Cortez Masto and her Republican challenger, former State Attorney General Adam Laxalt, are accusing each other of distorting their respective positions on abortion. This week, a group of pro-choice Latinas slammed Laxalt and his surrogates for claiming that Cortez Masto supports abortion up to the moment of birth. They say she in fact supports Nevada's current law that allows the procedure up through 24 weeks. Gioconda Hughes, an ICU nurse practitioner in Las Vegas, spoke at a news conference organized by the Cortez Masto campaign.
It is extremely frustrating when politicians spread lies, deliberately ignoring that some women's lives are at risk, or when women are victims of sexual violence.
In a recent op-ed, Laxalt praised the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade and said he would support restricting abortion to the first 13 weeks of pregnancy. He has called that decision a historic victory for the sanctity of life, but says he respects Nevada's voters' decision to keep abortion legal and does not support a ban. He is endorsed by anti-abortion groups in the state. Susie Martinez, an officer of the Nevada AFL-CIO, says Laxalt is trying to have things both ways.
You know, if you care so much for children, how about you go visit foster homes? How about you go empty the orphanages? And just remember, stay out of my reproductive rights.
Cortez Masto supports unfettered access to contraception. As Attorney General, Laxalt defended the right of a Catholic charity to refuse to cover contraception for its employees, and he signed an amicus brief supporting pharmacists in Washington state who did not want to dispense the so-called morning after pill. For Nevada News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
World leaders mourn the loss of Queen Elizabeth II. The Department of Justice will appeal a decision to appoint a third-party inspector for Trump's seized documents. And Vice President Harris speaks to people of faith. With more on these stories, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The future is, as ever, obscure. The only certainty is that it will present the world with new and daunting problems. But if we continue to stick to our fundamental ideals, I have every confidence that we can resolve them.
Queen Elizabeth II of Britain addressing a joint meeting of Congress during a visit to the U.S. in 1991. Following news of the Queen's death on Thursday, President Joe Biden canceled his planned remarks on coronavirus boosters. The Department of Justice said Thursday it will appeal a Florida federal judge's decision to appoint a third party to examine documents seized by the FBI from Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. Trump's Save America PAC is now also being investigated by the DOJ. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen touted the Biden administration's economic policies during a visit to the Ford Motor Company's Electric Vehicle Center in Michigan on Thursday.
I believe firmly they will help us achieve stable, sustainable growth, and they'll move us toward a fairer and more resilient economy.
Biden travels to Ohio today to attend the groundbreaking of a new Intel microchip factory. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke at the National Baptist Convention's 142nd annual session, where she urged people of faith to defend the country's democratic values.
For me and President Joe Biden, faith guides our work every day. So I will say to the National Baptist Convention, we know we know deeply that when people of faith come together, anything is possible.
After an investigation found the e-cigarette maker Juul Labs deliberately targeted young people using a variety of marketing practices, 34 states will collectively receive more than $438 million as part of a court settlement. Tennessee Attorney General Jonathan Scrimeti says in addition to explicit advertising to kids, the company is required to stop even so-called subtle forms of marketing through social media and other avenues.
Such as funny education programs, which let them put their name and the existence of their product in front of kids. They're not allowed to use people under the age of 35 in their marketing, so they can't pay influencers. They can't use celebrities who are younger, who appeal to younger people.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, a weekly examination of major news stories. At 6, it's Let's Talk About Race. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear, with a low around 60. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny, with a high approaching 96. Today in history, in 2015, Queen Elizabeth II became the longest reigning monarch in United Kingdom history. The quote of the day is from the Queen at her coronation. "I have, in sincerity, pledged myself to your service, as so many of you are pledged to mine. Throughout all my life and with all my heart, I shall strive to be worthy of your trust." UK begins a 10-day mourning period for Queen Elizabeth II as people around the globe gather at British embassies to pay their respects. Bells tolled across Britain today, and mourners flocked to palace gates. In London, and at military sites across the United Kingdom, special guns fired 96 shots in a 16-minute salute, marking each year of the Queen's life. On King Charles' first full days of duties today, he left Balmoral and flew to London. Plans were for a meeting with new Prime Minister Liz Truss, appointed just this week. The King arrived at Buckingham Palace for the first time as sovereign. Crowds greeted him with shouts of "God Save the King" and "Well Done, Charlie." They sang the new national anthem, now called "God Save the King." It's a difficult time for the new sovereign, as Britons face an energy crisis, soaring costs of living, and fallout from Brexit. Lawmakers are paying tribute to the Queen in Parliament over 2 days. They will take an oath to King Charles III. Many sporting and cultural events were canceled, and some businesses, including the Bank of England, shut down or postponed their affairs. Charles immediately became the monarch at the time of his mother's death. He will formally be proclaimed king at a special ceremony tomorrow. The Queen's coffin will be brought to London, and she will lie in state for several days before her funeral in Westminster Abbey. The impact of her loss is unpredictable. She helped stabilize and modernize the monarchy, but its relevance in the 21st century, particularly among a series of scandals, has often been called into question. In addition, Charles is felt to be nowhere near as popular as his mother was. September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month. It's a disease not limited to African Americans. Mark Richardson has more.
September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month, a time when doctors and patient advocates hope to spread awareness of a complex and often misunderstood medical condition. Sickle cell anemia is a genetic disorder that causes red blood cells to have a sickle or crescent shape, leaving patients in a chronic state of anemia. Regular blood transfusions are a key treatment for the condition. Dr. Ma Huwe Quarmine, a pediatric hematologist at Phoenix Children's Hospital, says despite a commonly held belief, the condition is not limited to black people.
Sickle cell disease has generally been associated with people of African descent or African American, but it's also found in Asian, European descent, Indian descent, and even people from the Mediterranean.
Formine says the genetic condition is present at birth and is inherited through a gene from both parents. The CDC says it affects as many as 100,000 people across the U.S. and occurs in one out of every 365 African Americans. Sickle cell disease is considered to be both persistent and insidious. Formine says if it goes untreated, it can bring debilitating complications and even death at an early age.
It affects almost every organ in the body, and it can be quite an unrelenting disease, so that even patients who on the outside look well can have ongoing organ damage.
Formine says blood transfusions are crucial to relieving the symptoms of sickle cell, and there's an urgent need for blood donors from a wide variety of races and ethnicities.
It is ideal to have diversity in the donor pool, especially when you have sickle cell populations, because a lot of patients tend to be minority patients.
She says new drugs and biotechnologies, including gene therapy and genetically modified stem cells, are bringing better outcomes. Researchers have yet to find a cure. To donate blood, contact your local blood bank or go online to americasblood.org. I'm Mark Richardson for Arizona News Connection.
A policy expert worries about carbon capture. Mike Moen tells us more.
South Dakota regulators could get an updated MAP proposal this fall from a company behind a multi-state pipeline for underground storage of carbon dioxide. As that plays out, a public policy expert says research for these endeavors doesn't look promising. Summit Carbon Solutions wants to capture carbon emissions from ethanol plants and move it through states like South Dakota to be stored underground in North Dakota. Gene Sakara of the New School for Social Research says there's a body of research about this technology for coal plants that cuts into arguments about its effectiveness.
The studies have shown that process actually emits 3.4 to 4.7 tons of CO2 for each ton that's captured and stored. So it emits more carbon dioxide than it captures and stores underground.
And a new report from the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis notes most large-scale projects have underperformed, with only a couple of successful ones. Another complication is this year's findings that ethanol has a higher carbon intensity than gasoline. South Dakota's Public Utilities Commission says Summit is altering its proposed pipeline route for the state ahead of the permit review. Summit insists its project will be good for the environment, but Sakara says these are often taxpayer-subsidized ventures pushed by private companies. She argues there would need to be an overwhelming investment to yield any actual benefits.
One study by Princeton shows 66,000 miles of CO2 pipelines would be needed to operate at the 1 gigaton level. And the United States emits 5 gigatons of CO2 a year.
She adds having a maze of these pipelines around the country could also pose a safety risk. Republican leaders, mainly in Iowa, have been proponents of the Summit project, but the Biden administration also has dedicated resources for carbon capture. Sakara thinks policymakers should stay in the path of proven sources like wind and solar.
Our resources and time should be spent elsewhere on non-carbon sources of energy.
Meanwhile, the Summit project has also angered property owners who have claimed they're being threatened with eminent domain if they don't agree to land easements. Mike Moen, Greater Dakota News Service.
A community deals with the aftermath of the James Smith Cree Nation stabbings. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In the James Smith Cree Nation in north central Saskatchewan, the healing begins after Sunday's stabbing rampage that killed 10 people and wounded 18 others. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, people gathered at the reserve for a news conference.
There was a ceremonial fire, a sweat lodge, and an honor song. It was an emotional event. One man whose sister was killed in the attacks wrapped his arm around the widow of one of the suspects and talked about forgiveness. Wally Burns is the chief of the James Smith Cree Nation.
Trying to hold myself together with the words that need to come out. We ask three things from the governments. We ask that we have our own tribal policing. We ask for awareness in addictions. We ask for treatment centers so things wouldn't happen like this to any nations.
He also thanked Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe for their support in the wake of the tragedy. And with news of the death of Queen Elizabeth, he also offered his gratitude for a message she issued just a day before, offering her condolences to the community. The commissioner of the RCMP also attended the event, adding that she is open to working towards a self-government police force in the community. A trust fund is also being set up to accept financial donations and to provide help in the wake of the attacks. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Members of the San Carlos Apache Tribe in Arizona have filed a request with the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to rehear a case involving a sacred site. They're hoping to block a massive copper mine slated for Oak Flat on National Forest land. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
Members of the group Apache Stronghold this week traveled from the San Carlos Apache Reservation east of Phoenix to San Francisco to make the petition and hold a day of prayer. In June, a three-judge panel upheld a lower court decision denying the group's attempt to halt the Resolution copper mine. It's planned for Oak Flat, which tribal members describe as their most sacred site and key to many religious ceremonies. Apache Stronghold hopes the court will grant a new hearing in front of 11 judges. Such a move by the Circuit Court would be very rare, and only a handful are allowed each year out of hundreds of requests. Circuit Court officials say justices could take several weeks or longer to decide whether to rehear the case. Beckett Law, which represents Apache Stronghold, says they're hoping for a decision by early October, and they also plan to file a petition with the U.S. Supreme Court. In 2014, Congress approved a federal land exchange that paved the way for the copper mine. Tribal groups, environmentalists, and religious advocates say it would destroy Oak Flat, along with the area's desert ecosystem. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
This week, the University of Arizona celebrated the grand opening of a new tribal microcampus. The campus will serve the Pascua-Yaqui tribe in Tucson. It's intended to help tribal members obtain college degrees, certificates, and access the university's technology, research, and tutoring services. The space is located east of the reservation in a building of a former middle school. University officials say the new campus is part of their commitment to Native communities, and they hope to establish future campuses for other tribes in the state. The tribe's education department worked with the university to develop initial curriculum. Classes offered are in areas of indigenous governance, leadership and management, and policy. The fall term begins in October. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A Seattle utility wants to make it easier to find charging stations for electric vehicles. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Many city residents want an electric vehicle, but they hesitate to buy one because they do not have anywhere to install a charger. Jacob Orenberg is with Seattle City Light. The electric utility is piloting a program that will provide these residents with EV charging on the street.
The city of Seattle is a relatively older city for the West Coast, and many of our neighborhoods were built before the mid-20th century when the automobile became dominant. And so many of the homes there don't have driveways or garages. We are also a relatively dense city with many apartments and condominiums. And residents of those buildings frequently rely on street parking too for all of their parking when they're at home.
The utility is currently reviewing requests from residents who want a fast charger installed on the street in front of their home. The program staff will select 30 sites and install the chargers early next year. Orenberg says the program will prioritize locations near apartments, condos, and mobile home parks.
We want to install these in places where these chargers will get the most amount of use and thereby have the greatest impact.
He says if the program is successful, the utility aims to roll it out on a larger scale, so it's easier for more people to drive EVs. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Friday, September 9th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. The producer for tonight's newscast is myself, Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, Mike Moen, Nadia Romligan, Mark Richardson, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, in May of this year, a white supremacist killed 10 people in Buffalo, New York. He made clear that he wanted to kill black people because he believed there's a plot run by Jews to replace white people with black and brown people. News media had an opportunity to deeply interrogate the obvious spurs for the horrific act, including, of course, the media outlets and pundits and politicians who themselves repeatedly invoke this white replacement idea. But it didn't really happen. Counterspin spoke at the time about issues we hoped more media would be exploring with Matt Gertz, senior fellow at Media Matters for America, who's been following Fox News and Tucker Carlson for years. And we spoke also with Eric K. Ward, senior fellow at Southern Poverty Law Center and executive director at Western State Center, about ways to move forward. We're going to hear that conversation again.